Welcome. This is the introduction to the Graph Explorer. And actually, it's a little bit more than introduction. I will go into a little bit of a deeper dive into this topic. And here's what I'm thinking. The first 10 minutes or so, I would give just a little high overview for some of you. It might be a repeat of some information you already know. But everybody should be able to call the Graph API using a tool I will demonstrate. It's very easy. If you can open your browser, you can call the API directly and see what the calls look like and the responses to this API. And then I want to go into a little bit more advanced, show you a different way to call the API through another tool. And then finally, I want to show some code where we actually do the actual construction of graph service objects. And using one of the libraries we supply in Visual Studio, you can very easily make calls to the graph. So that's what I'm planning. Then at the end, I have two partners here to join me. And I'll introduce them. And they will show you some solutions that are already using the API. So so it's not just someone from Microsoft saying, oh, yes, there's a wonderful API. There's some people actually using the API. And I'll talk a little bit more about how some of the use cases are. Okay, so that's the topics. I also, at the very end, I will talk about some other resources. And I will also share with you my email address and contact information, because if you're working on your project and if you need help or you have some questions or you're stuck, something's blocking your project, do not hesitate to contact me. And not just me, I will have my whole team behind me, my developers, testers, other people that can assist to answer your questions. The people that actually who are writing the actual API. So for just a moment, let me step back to talk about Azure Active Directory. Probably during this week, you heard lots of sessions talking about Azure Active Directory, how popular it is, it's growing. And these are some facts and numbers that I had pulled from our marketing team, backed by some log analysis on our back end. So the most important point is we have now over 3 million companies on the system, and it's growing very quickly. The sheer number of the directory users that are in the directory and authenticating to the system is very real. It's growing. This is actually a little bit old. It's already past this. 25,000 new users. I think this is now past 30,000 users each time they log on for the first time. It's very big, very large growth. And so so the first question is, where is this growth coming from? So the very first easy answer is Office 365. Office 365 is very popular. It has exceeded almost all our expectation in terms of sales and adoption. So this is probably the biggest reason for the growth. However, Azure Active Directory is the core directory for other services, such as Intune, Dynamics CRM. All the online services coming in to our system are using the Azure Active Directory. And now, on top of this, we're hoping to have additional applications being built as well. And then some statistics on the on-premise Active Directory. Of course, it's predominantly used on the on-premises environment as well. And what we envision is that most of these Active Directory users who are on the on-premises will eventually move to the cloud. They're either already there for some enterprises and small companies, but eventually the plan is to make it a very natural extension for people who have on-premises to go to the cloud. Out-of-the-box experience should be they will get Azure Active Directory. So there's two interesting things about these numbers. Number one, if you are a developer offering solutions to customers, then this is a great opportunity because we have lots of customers, lots of installed enterprises. If you are a customer who is on the system, what this should also say is that you should expect to see more applications being offered on top of the Microsoft ones. So there's lots and lots of new applications being built and coming to market. So make your actual investment in Office 365 even better. Okay, so some of the core scenarios that we see people using. So let me just say one thing: the API is is kind of what I call plumbing, just like electrical and water. It's not the solution. So all I'm doing is providing the plumbing. So if you're the developer or whoever is building the application, you're the actual the one that's building the great solutions. All we're doing is trying to provide the best water electrical system for you, and to use that analogy. So that's what our job is for the API. But what we see are the scenarios are very similar to the same scenarios that on-premises Active Directory, LDAP calls are being made from various applications. It's the same scenarios. So you'll see things such as people pickers, workflows, authorization decisions. So because we have the relationship between managers and direct reports, you can have workflows to query the directory to see what the path is. We also have something very unique in the cloud, which is the subscriptions. This is not something you typically see on-premises, only in the cloud where you have subscribed services. And also we can now do change data. So if your application is storing the data of users or groups locally, you can now very efficiently only request changes of data. You do not have to call the get the full list of users each time. So I'll demonstrate that also. And we support writing to the directory. So updating users and groups, setting user passwords, adding users to groups and roles, provisioning and deprovisioning. So you know we also ship something called directory sync. So some of these scenarios work very well with the directory sync as well. For example, directory sync cannot do license assignment for provisioning. Well, this Graph API, you can do the actual, not only the provisioning and deprovisioning of users, but the license assignment. So if you use directory sync with the Graph, it's a very good combination. So the Graph API is a REST-based API. So how many people have used REST interfaces before? Okay, great, almost everyone. If you're not familiar with it, it's very simple. It's basically using HTTP requests, very familiar ones that everyone is used to. The same thing for authentication. When you actually authenticate, I'll show you, I'll give you a demonstration. Same thing, we use HTTP to get the actual tokens. Let me go back here. The other thing is we are compatible with this OData V3. What's important about that is the filtering capabilities. So we can do some more constructive query filters. Now, we don't have the complete set, but we're adding more and more of the filtering. And then we're using OAuth 2 for the authentication and role-based assignment for authorization. How many are familiar with OAuth 2? Okay, a few. Yeah, so OAuth 2, you know, there's different formats of the OAuth 2. So we're supporting the first one, which is the client credentials, so basically service-to-service authentication. We now have a preview of the user authentication, or delegated, so the user can say, hey, I grant this application permission to call the directory on my behalf, and whatever permissions the user has, that is what the application will also inherit. So we have that in a preview as well. So very quick step back. If on the right side is the on-premises Active Directory, which already has a very rich history for administration, PowerShell, lots and lots of third-party applications as well. So we did the same for the Azure Active Directory. So the most familiar one is Office 365 portal. We also now have the Windows Azure Management portal. We also have PowerShell in the cloud as well. We have the Directory Sync tool. So this was a requirement for most enterprises who are going to move to the cloud. They have to figure out how to move all this data into the cloud for both directory purposes and identity purposes. So the piece we were missing, and also back on premise, lots and lots of applications already using LDAP and Kerberos. So what we didn't have in the cloud is the equivalent for this into the cloud. So what we did, we said, okay, let's build on the standards. Let's make this a REST-based. Let's use OAuth for authentication. So that's what we designed. So that is exactly what this interface is. And notice I purposely put this block, this Graph API, a little bit further away from the directory. So the purpose is that this relationship is the first one. So tomorrow, in the future, this API may call some other service or services back here. So this front end is really servicing a common interface. And we will also have a common programming model and common authentication model, so that we will have in the future more and more services on the back end of this graph. And also we'll have relationships. So that is why I purposely showed this design this way. So by design, we're going to have more and more services behind this API that's in the front end. OK. So back to the directory. I wanted to cover the query format. It's quite simple. The first part is always the same, graph.windows.net. This one does not change. It doesn't matter whether you're in Europe, United States, Asia. This is the same everywhere. The next is tenant. So this is the graph calls are tenant specific. So this can be any domain that the company owns, or it can be a object ID, a unique identifier for the tenant, but it does have to be scoped for the tenant. The next is the actual directory entity, so users, groups, roles, licenses, and then this API version. So I just say here API version 2013. The month 04, which is April, and the 5th. So this was our GA release back in April. And we will have new versions of the API. But if you're building your application, it doesn't mean that you have to always take the new API. You always specify what API version that you're going to build on. So when the new API comes out, you can find out what is changed in the API, if you want to change to this API. So it lets you as a developer take your time to switch over to some new version. So for example, we already have a 0.4.10 preview version, and then probably we will have one for coming up here in July. We'll have another GA release with some new features. And then I mentioned earlier the OData. So this is the part where you can do this optional OData query filters. So you can do such things as filter and top. Now there's new ones that are coming that we'll also support. Okay, so let me just switch over and do a demo. So I mentioned that everyone should be able to do a query against the directory. And if you can open a browser, you can do your queries right here. So this is the Graph Explorer. This is just a tool that we produced. So it's just a very simple browser-based UI. And you type in basically your query structure here. You can do this against your own company if you have a company in Azure AD or Office 365. If you don't have one, then doesn't matter. You select Use Demo. And this is your demo company. And what you see here are the top-level directory entities, of course, users, applications. So let's just take users for simple demonstration. So when I did this query, you'll see the response down here. These are all the user objects from this demonstration company with this domain graphdir1 on Microsoft.com. So this return object here is in this what we call JSON, JavaScript object notation, and this Graph Explorer is basically rendering the query very simply. Likewise, if I wanted to just see one individual user, I can specify their UPN, user principal name. So you can see this is just one user, and you can see some of the properties that are returned. So the properties are typically alphabetical. So you see some of the signed licensing, you see city, country, department, et cetera, all the normal information coming back in this JavaScript object notation. So the Graph Explorer is very simple. So it gives you a way to just to do your queries So what I found also is even later on when you're developing and you have some question like how does that query work, so it's actually very useful for troubleshooting later on. You can still use this tool later to validate what your code is doing. If I wanted to actually use it against my own tenant, so let's say I have some company. And I want to do users. What's going to happen is it will ask you for some credentials. Specifically, you need a application principal and a symmetric key, because using the demonstration company, we are doing the authentication underneath. You can't see it, but if you use your own company, obviously you want to be able to come in here and be able to supply that. So. Okay, I just wanted to show you that very briefly. It is a very useful tool, and everybody should be able to use that. So Graph Explorer, cloudapp.net. Okay, so I want to talk briefly about the authentication. So this is using OAuth2 client credentials. OAuth2, I think, has four primary modes of authentication. So we're using the one here, the simple one, which is application level authentication. So this is good for service to service. I have no user context here. So in other words, well, let's walk through the what actually is happening. So your application is here, and before it can actually make a request to this graph, it must first get a token. And then once it gets a token, it will include the token in the authorization header, and then the graph will actually validate if the token is valid. It is issued from a valid endpoint, which is this one. And also if the inside of the token, the claims are good, including the expiry and the resource you're requesting. So the first request is to get the token. So here there will be a specific HTTP call. And then the token is returned. Then your application is going to take the token, add it to the authorization header, and then make it for all these requests. The tokens right now are about a 12-hour token, but they will eventually expire, so you will have to get another token. And I don't have in here anything about, again, user authentication. This is strictly a service-to-service application-level authentication call. Now, the authorization is done back here. So when the call is made, there's additional check here. So let's say this application is trying to read data. We will actually do a check to see what has been configured for the application, if it is permitted to do a read operation. And then, of course, if your application is trying to write, change data in the directory, we'll make the authorization check. If for some reason the authorization fails, we will obviously send back a response unauthorized to make that request. So that's the very high-level picture of this authorization. So how do you get a token? Just hold on for the moment of thinking about how you actually present, where do you configure it. But let's talk about how you actually get the token. So it's a post, HTTP post. And instead of calling graph.windows.net, you call logonwindows.net. This is our universal OAuth authentication endpoint for Azure AD. You will specify again the tenant, and you're specifying OAuth2 in this token version. In the header, you will specify some URL formatting. But the grant type is where in the body of the post is where you specify the token format. So we're using OAuth client credentials. The resource we're asking for is the graph windows.net. And then the next two important pieces are the client ID and the client secret. The client ID is some GUID, and the client secret here is, again, some GUID. So the client ID and secret is basically equivalent to the username and password. After you get this request, then what you should make a call, and in this authorization, you will supply the actual token that was returned back to the client. So let me actually demonstrate this. And I'm going to use a different tool this time to do this demonstration. How many of you have used Fiddler? Fiddler? Okay, almost everyone. This tool is, you can download it from the internet. It's very, very, very powerful tool for debugging. I also find it very useful when you're first trying to understand if the what you're actually trying to do in your code. So this helps you understand what is going on in the actual process. Then when you actually write code, it actually becomes much easier. So let's do this. I already put some things in here. So I'm going to do this log on to this same demonstration company. And again, it's similar to what I had on the PowerPoint slide. Let me take it. Sorry. Go back here. Okay, so I got it up. So I'm going to do a HTTP post. It's to this company, same one that I did before, this GraphDIR company. And it's to the logon.windows.net. And as I showed on my PowerPoint, here's the body of the post, the grant type, the client credential, the client ID, and the client secret there. So, all right, let's execute. So it's making the request. And now what should come back here, because it was everything was correct, it provided me a token. Here's the actual token down at the bottom. So let me just copy that. And you see some other information about the token, expiry period, the resource. Now let's actually make the graph call with this token. So actually this one. So it's a get call. So in here, I will replace with this token that I just got. And I will make the request. All right, so now this is a graph call to get users. So execute. So now you see it returned some successful response. And it's, again, the return value is this JavaScript object notation. And you see the curly braces? Each one of these curly braces represents a user object. So let's just look at the first one. So here's the properties of some user that we have in this system. And it's just some test user that's already configured. So in this way, I can get the token. I can prove that I don't have any problems with my code to get the token. Then the second issue is making the call. So when you're troubleshooting, very easy to break out the two separate things. You got the token. You have no problem there. If you're having problems with the graph call, then you should be able to isolate the problem separately. And just to show you one other thing, I can also show getting some details for specific user properties. So in this particular case, there's a user property called thumbnail photo. So again, I'm going for this one individual user with this UPN here, Adam at GraphDIR at Microsoft, and I'm getting their thumbnail photo. So this is just one property of the user object. So if I execute that, what you see is returned back to your application is the actual thumbnail photo that's stored from the directory for this user being returned. So quite simple tool. Should be able to use that one for troubleshooting. And this is a tool we use all the time when we're troubleshooting or validating some use cases. So let's just go to the next one. Okay, so I showed you this client ID and the client secret. So where do you actually get this client ID and client secret, and where do you configure it? So before we had the Azure Management Portal, our recommended way was using PowerShell. If you had an administrative account, you could run PowerShell, and you can get you can configure your client ID and your client secret. So since that time, we switched to telling people, please don't use PowerShell. Please use the Azure Management Portal. So the Azure Management Portal has a user interface where you can register your application, and you will be issued a client ID and a client secret. The reason we recommend it this way, because the configuration, number one, is much easier than running PowerShell. Number two, it does the role assignment, so the permissions, what you're authorized to do. Can you read? Can you write? So it automatically takes care of this. And the second thing is if you are planning ever to make your application available to other customers, then this is the place to do it. Because you see this external access? Right now, this is set to off, which means I'm only developing the application for my company. So maybe you're just developing a line of business or single tenant application. However, if you're planning to offer your application to other customers so that they can use it, then you can, from this one configuration page, you basically reconfigure it to say external access equal to on. There's some other requirements that you must fulfill, like adding your company logo, you must use HTTPS. But once you do that, then other customers in Azure Active Directory can use your application. So again, so this is where the client ID and the client secret are. So let me see if I have some actual screen of that. Next. Yes, I forgot what to mention. This is where you configure the read and write permissions. So right now we have very kind of coarse permissions. You can either do the read or you can do the read and write. Or if you don't actually do any directory access, we also have pure single sign-on as well. So those are the configuration options. In the future, we will have much more granular roles and permissions. As a matter of fact, we will also have custom roles in our system. So if you don't like the seven roles that we have, the system roles, if you will, the canned roles, then you can create your own custom role. So that is also coming. So let me jump over here real fast to the management portal. So here I'm already logged on to the Windows Azure Management Portal. And there's a node here at the very bottom called Active Directory. And when I click on that, I can see the company. This is the same company I've been using in the demo here. So you notice that I can see users. I would also be able to see domains, directory integration. So some of this is the duplication of what you can see in Office 365, the Office 365 portal. However, the one thing you cannot see in the Office 365 portal is this applications. So when I click applications here, you see I have many, many test applications here. Let me just choose one. So this is my one that I've actually have created. And this is available for other customers to use. Enable your app for read and write. This is my client ID. And notice there's a create a key. When I configure a key will actually be generated here. And let me just create a new one. And the first thing you do is select whether you want 1 year or 2 year. So let's just make this a 1 year for now. It says here the key value will be displayed after you save it. So let me save this. And once this is saved, the key value will actually be displayed to you. So here, this is the key value right here. This field here. And also very important, copy and save the key value, because after you navigate or log off from this screen, you cannot see the key value any longer. So it's only viewable at configuration time. This is very similar to user passwords, user's passwords. You cannot read the user's passwords ever again, but you can reconfigure it. So you should definitely copy it, copy this off somewhere safe. And then you would be able to, of course, refer to it. The other thing, you notice this application I constructed here, this has external access equal to on. So this is a multi-tenant app that I'm planning, in this case, to offer to other customers. As a matter of fact, there's no reason why any of you, if you have Azure Active Directory, you can't actually take a look at this app and grant consent. But here is something important, this URL for granting access. Let me just show you that briefly. So this is what your customers would see, potentially, if they wanted to sign up for the app. So what happens is this will show some type of consent dialog. So maybe you have some website that has a description of your application, how it integrates with Windows Azure Active Directory. Then if you have something that says, would you like to try this application or would you like to buy this application, then you will come over to our website. where your information is presented, your company logo, any information that you have. But most importantly, if the customer says grant access, if they select this, then what happens is our portal will create an application and service principle underneath this customer's tenant. And at that point, we will then, your application has permissions to actually call this directory, this customer's data, directory data. So if I say grant access right here, this will then send a response back to your website. We will contain the company information and that the fact that they accepted the response. So that's why the management portal is an important piece to where deciding where your application should be registered. Okay, I just want to talk about read-write operations very quickly. So very common scenarios are, like I mentioned, user provisioning, user licensing, also group management. There are certain objects that are read-only. So for example, roles. Right now, as I mentioned, we have these 7 roles. You can assign users and applications to roles, but you cannot create new roles. You cannot delete these roles. Subscriptions also are something that's in our system, in our commerce system. So you cannot create your own custom subscriptions, for example. So roles, as I mentioned, we are going to have some ability to create custom roles. So this will change. So this will now be something that you can actually manage for your roles that you add in addition to the standard roles that we have. Just note, these are all post operations typically. The only exception is a transitive group lookup. There's something called is member of. This is not a GET request. It's actually implemented as a post. This is when you're trying to determine if a user is a member of a group and you have nesting of groups. You don't have to navigate all the group memberships. You can just do one lookup, and this will give you a response, true or false, whether the user is a member of a role. Okay, user creation. So this is a good example of a user being created. So it's graphwindows.net, you specify users, API version. You again have to include the token, the authorization. But in the account, this is the minimum properties to create a user. You can have more than this, but this is the minimum requirements. So account enabled, user principal name, display name, password, the initial password, and the mail nickname. So after that, the user is provisioned. So that's the most simple. Also note that I did not set the user's usage location. So there is something called usage location, which is usually the country code. So if you're going to assign a license to this user, then you have to do the user's usage location. That is because there's some enforcement of licensing and countries. So we actually have to do some checking on that. So, but if you're just creating a user without a license, then this is all that is required. This is the minimum. Here's a user adding a user to a group. So something to note. The relationship between users and groups, or users and managers, are represented as links. Very similar to on-premise Active Directory, if you ever look at links and relationships. So we do the same in our directory. So you'll see that in this particular case, I specify the object ID or a GUID of the group, and I say $links and members. And then here in the body, I actually create the link to the actual object. This, in this particular case, this is another user. It could also be a group. So that's why we say I specify directory objects here. It's it can be a user, a group, or a contact that's a member of this new group that I'm adding to. Resetting a user's password. So that's just a very common request here. I also can specify whether the user has to change their password on next logon. If you're familiar with Office 365, a lot of times when you reset a user's password, They have to, it's only a temporary password. They have to set it again when they first log on. But we had a lot of feedback that customers sometimes said, don't let my users change the password again. I just want to give them whatever password they want. So you can specify whether they have to change it or not by specifying force change password logon. License assignment. So this is, I just added this one just so that people are clear. So this, notice that the API versions on this one is 2013.04.10 preview. So we didn't put this in the 0.4.0.5, the general release. We are going to general release this one, but we showed this in a preview first. So again, this is the body looks like this. And you would basically have the SKU ID, which is, in this particular case, this is the Office 365 Enterprise Pack, I think, which contains Exchange, SharePoint, Link. And then this is, after you execute this, this is where this particular user will actually get the license. Like I mentioned before, the user must have a valid usage location. Otherwise, you will get an error response saying the user does not have a usage location assigned. Also, I can remove licenses. So in this particular case, add license would be empty, and remove license would contain the SKU ID of the license you're removing. So you can do the license removal that way also. Okay. Now I'm going to switch over to actual doing some code. So you noticed in Fiddler or in this Graph Explorer, I was showing you how to get users, do all those type of operations. So here's now I'm actually jumping over to Visual Studio. We have lots of sample applications. We have some in PHP. We have C Sharp. We have MVC. ASP.NET. I just for this demonstration, I'm just using a very simple console application. The reason being is I just wanted to show you what the queries look like in the construct. So in this project, I have two main pieces of code: the actual source code for the console app, but also here I have a helper library. You notice, and in this helper library are some things such as how to get the token, how to get the authorization token, how to add the token to the authorization header, and then also some directory service referencing. So this is the actual constructor to make the calls to the Graph API. So this is all available from our downloads that you can to play with. But let me just go into this console app and show you what's going on here. So in this console app, it's very, very simple. Let's actually come over here. Sorry. Close that one. Yeah, so this is it's very simple. I have some includes that include this helper. And I also include what they call the WCF data services client. So this helps in terms of the construction and the response handling for the data that's coming back. So let's just walk through this code very quickly. So first of all, there are some hard-coded parameters. So here's my tenant. So remember I always said the graph calls must always be to a specific tenant. So this is just an example of a single tenant app. Here's my application principal ID, which is the app ID, client ID. And here's my password, just a string password. And then here's where I set up the connection URI to the graph, and I will specify the tenant name. So in this app, it's very simple. The first thing is I'm going to get a token, and then I'm going to make a graph call. So let's actually execute this. So I'll run to here. Okay, so now I'm executing step by step through here. So I'm going to go execute this step. It made the graph call, and now I should have a token. Yeah, so there it is. The access token is right there in this value. So this application now has the token. Now I'm going to actually have a constructor to do the graph service in this next call. So it used the tenant name. It used all the information to get the actual graph service call. And now I'm going to get users. So now I'm just going to do a query response and get a list of users and get the response back. So I'll run to here. So it's actually executing the call. And what I should have is a user list here. And let's actually go through the next one. Okay, so now I'm going to display the user list. And it should just be 31 different users. Here they are, one after the other. You can see the properties. And it's just going to simply display one after the other. And if I switch over the console, you see that it's now just printing out display name and the user principal name. So I'm not going to go through all of them. So I'm going to go run to the next section of code. But you should see 31 users I displayed from my test company or demonstration company. Now I'm going to get groups. So same kind of thing. I have 14 groups. And this just simply starts displaying their display name. And if they have an email address, they will display the email name here. So again, I'm not going to run through the entire piece of code. But next, I'm going to look at the token. So this is a little bit artificial. But my purpose is to show you that you do have to think about if the token is expired. So this graph helper library has a method to check if the token is expired. And I basically can look at if the token is expired, this will be either true or false, or if it will expire, and I've just artificially said in 2 minutes. If either of these conditions are true, I'm going to get another token. But we know this token is very new, so it should not execute this code. Let's text. Yeah, so it skipped over the path. So we might take this code and put it in the library further down so that you don't have to ever do this in your code. So anyways, we will probably most likely do that. So next one is I'm going to actually do a write operation to create a new user. So you see all the values that I was showing earlier in the post are similar. Account enabled, display name, et cetera, all these information are right here. But let me do one thing. Make sure I, because I was actually making sure this thing was going to work. Let's make sure that I didn't create this user already. If not, I'll delete them. Okay, I don't see this user here, so this should be good. Okay, so I'll execute this. I'll do the try, so it's trying to execute. Let's see what it actually did. Yeah, I created a new user. See their user, user principal name. So if I go back here to the management console and I do a refresh, should be the first user. There, I just created this new user. So that's a very simple get request, or sorry, write request to create this user. Okay, so that's just a very quick demo. I can supply this, actually a more detailed version of this console app with all the methods and all the type of entities. So if you're interested in that, I will definitely share that with you. So let me switch over. Okay. So I want to talk next about a differential query. So if your application requires storage of the local data, the users or groups, and you need to store it locally, for whatever reason, and you want to make a request every time to get new users, it would be very expensive if you had to get a full list of users every single time. So what we introduced is something called differential query. So instead of making a call for users, I will make a request to only get users that have been added, deleted, or updated. So basically the difference since the last call I made. So the structure of the call is very similar. It, again, uses graphwindows.net, domain. I use, in this example, directory objects, but it could be users, it could be groups. I can only look for those changes. And then the API version. And then here's the most important part, is the N delta link. So that's where I can see whether the changes have been coming or not. So let me just jump over to, again, a demo. I'll do this in Fiddler this time. So let me just, let's see here. Let's get rid of all these, actually. Load in my archive again. Okay. So let's see here. Let's make Composer. Let's look at users. So now, in this one, we are going to look at just users. I don't want to look at this particular individual user. So now, at the very end, I will add the delta link. I think that's correct. And notice I don't put anything at the end of the equal sign. I just execute this. Now, what happens is I should still get a full list of users. You see each one of the curly braces is an individual user object. So remember, I had like 31 of these or 32. I can't remember. But the important difference is I also get something called the delta link. And if you look at this delta link, this contains a very long string at the very end. And this is what I will call next to see if there's been any changes to users. So let's do that. Let's just make a copy of that. Go to Composer. Now, let me come here. Okay, now I have this very long delta link, and what should happen, I will get rid of that. So this delta link, I missed one thing. At the end of this, I have to put the API version. Let me come here again to the end. Thank you. All right, let's see. Yes, so now I got an empty set coming back. So why did I get empty set? Because I had no changes to users. I didn't add any users. I didn't delete any users. But let's go back here. And let's actually delete this user, right? So now I want to actually remove that user. I'm going to delete this user. One user deleted. Now let's come back to the fiddler. And let's actually execute this again. So now you see the change is coming. I have one user that was deleted, and it reported that to me right here. So that's very quickly how you saw how the change that happened in the directory. And now from this point on, I can just request just changes for users or groups. And also if I use the generic object type, directory objects, it will return to me changes in users, groups, and contacts. So any changes will come from this in differential query. Okay, so yeah, question. Yeah, so the question is, will the delta link ever expire? So I double-checked with my developer, and he says there is no expiry. So in theory, assuming this API version is still in our system, when you call it, you will get a valid response coming back. So now there are some things that you should be aware of. If your system is deleting and adding a user, and then deleting a user and adding the same user. So it will be important to look at the sequence of the timed events to know which one is really the true state. Because you could have added, deleted, added again. But he's really not deleted because you had a third operation, which is the add. So sequence is important in this context. OK, so that was the delta link. OK, I mentioned briefly that the OAuth 2, this is all I showed was application level. Authentication is not really efficient or not good enough for some applications because I don't just need to know about the application. I need to know who is the user who is making this call. So the user may just be just a simple user, no administrative rights, which means that they can only do certain very basic operations. For example, if they did get user, they can only see their own user information. If the user is an administrator, then of course they can do more. So that is why this OAuth 2 authorization code grant is very important. We have a preview of this right here. So this link will get you to the preview, and it will walk you through how this code actually works. And then eventually we are going to ship something called Azure Authentication Library. I don't know the final name, but there will be some library that does all of the token management for you, and including the OAuth 2 client credential flow. So, okay. So I have now about 20 minutes. So I want to bring up Martina Grom from AtWork, and I want her to give you a little demo of some application that they've actually developed. Martina? Here you can come anywhere.
Thank you.
This is the clicker.
How does it work?
Forward.
Okay. Right
there. Yeah.
Okay. So good morning, everybody. What I want to show you is a solution we built based on Graph API. We use also a little bit PowerShell there. It's first of all, I want to introduce myself. I'm an Office 365 MVP, and we are specialized as a company in developing solutions, online solutions, and web development, and everything around Office 365, and also a lot about Windows Azure. So we use Windows Azure websites and Graph API and web roles and worker roles and so on, and we are deep dive into provisioning users and provisioning portals. And one of the main reason is our customers told us that they said, okay, we are a franchiser. And with Office 365, it works very fine, but one thing doesn't work there. In Office 365, you have a role-based access model. That means you have administrators which can use which can administer services or users or passwords or invoices, but you don't have a model where you can say, okay, I have an administrator who manage only one domain or a group of users and can only manage those users. And this solution we built with Delegate 365 was that we split our users among groups, organizational units, and domains. That means if we look there, we have one portal administrator, which can also be a global administrator within Office 365, but it's not necessary here. We use the Graph API service principle to connect there. And if you look here, I have the portal admin, which is at work on Microsoft.com. And I have three other administrators. It's Chris, Tony, and Martina. And they are responsible for different organizational units. That means Martina, for example, is responsible for the organizational unit Berlin and Munich. And Tony manages Berlin and Vienna, and Chris is head of human resources and Vienna. And we split the administration within those people. That means, if we look here, we have Martina, which manages Berlin and Munich, and she's responsible to manage different users, which is Max and Mary, and she can manage only those domains and only users which are member of Berlin and Munich. But I think I'll show you then in a demo, a very short demo. So our solution pretty looks like Office 365 from the portal, but you can also manage it via a mobile device because we build it with responsive web design, and we want to use it for the management of aliases and users and groups and licenses. The other point is it runs fully on Windows Azure, We only use Azure websites and SQL Azure as a database behind there. So let's look at a little demo. Red button.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you. If you look here, I'm pretty sure I timed out in the meantime. You are now on the portal, and you see here I'm the portal administrator. And you have here the dashboard. In the dashboard, you see the domains you're responsible for, and you also see the groups and the organizational units and the users you can manage. And what we are doing here, we also see the licenses which are available within this Office 365 tenant. So we can manage our users here. We can sync domains, or we have here their organizational units. For example, I can create here a new one, just name it and I create a new one and write it back directly into the store. And then we have here our administrators where we find Martina and also Tony. And I can edit here them or I can add them to the domains. So here I see my user Martina is only responsible for the domain delegate365.com. I can also assign her another domain or other domains which are available within Office 365. But for the moment, I leave her on delegate365.com and I will assign her to two organizational units. You see here a list of all available organizational groups we have within the portal, and Martina is can manage only users which are in Berlin and in Munich. And then you see here all available users within that tenant. It's also very important that we manage the users directly in our management portal. That means an administrator cannot manage through Office 365 at console. Okay, in the next step, I switch to the user Martina. And log her on. And what you can see here is my user Martina has a little bit different administration portal. She can only manage one domain. She only owns one group. She only owns two organizational units and can only manage three users there. And you see here her responsibilities, and you also see that there is less menu items left here. And when I go here, I can add a new user. I have some in there already. I can add, for example, a new user, name it Darth Vader, with a display name. And also, what's very important here, I can only add this user to the domains I'm responsible for. The usage location is United States, and the organizational unit is Munich. And then I can add also the license to that user and create it. directly within Office 365. So you see, it's very easy to manage my users here through that portal. And then you see, after the creation of the username and the temporary password, which I can go back to the user and give it there. And then you see here, I have now my four users I'm able to manage. I can add them to different groups, reset the passwords, do them in different distribution lists, and so on. And the next thing we also do within our portal, we also have the opportunity to import users from an Excel file. So back to the slides. Just to summarize what we have here, we are currently in building the solution. That means our customers are giving us very nice feedback, and they said, okay, we want localization, we want different languages, we also want statistics within Office 365, Delegate 365, and we will make that solution available through Office Store or Azure Gallery or within Windows 8 Store. My wish list, or our wish list to Edward Wu's team, is first of all, I want to thank you because he's a great supporter in helping us build that solution. What we found out during developing it is what we miss is projections for lower network traffic. Then we want to have single call operations. In the moment, creating a user and adding a license are two different operations we have there. Then a wish list is that we have also user authentication within the solution, and we need more filtering options. That means that we only select a different subset of users there. And as you have seen, we also use some PowerShell in behind. So we want to use Graph API because it's very fast. And it's more fast than PowerShell can ever be. So it's very good to have it here also. So if you want to try it, we have a preview open there. Just go to the website and send us a little contact form, and then we can go through the upgrading process with you. Thanks.
Thanks, Martina. Okay.
Thanks, Martina. Okay, so good feedback. I've obviously worked with them, so we're getting a lot of the good feedback, and we're going to incorporate it into some of our upcoming releases. By the way, we can now release very quickly. Since we're in the cloud, our release cycle is much, much more quick, and even quicker than Office 365, because with this core API, you can expect changes on a cycle of every 2-3 weeks, that type of thing. Now, we won't break any API version that you're already using, but the new features, if there's very different things, either properties or methods, then we always put that in a new version of API. Then you can decide when you want to upgrade your application to use the next version. Okay, so next person I'd like to bring up is Sebastian Fillinger from AIX Concept.
Thank you. Good morning. We have made something similar like the people from Edgework. So we are a company that are in Germany, located in Aachen, founded in 2003. And we have specialty solutions for the K-12 market, so for schools. So our portal that we have created is based on Windows Azure 2, and we are using the Graph API 2 to user management. And we have a multi-language support in it, so we have not only the German market that we are targeting, so there is a possibility to use another markets too. So, as I told, the user management is based on the Graph API, and we crave both security and distribution groups. But that is not possible currently with the Graph API, so we must do a trick to go back to the PowerShell in the background and use this for creating this. Also, our portal creates SharePoint sites for each classes and subjects or courses, and we create special mailboxes for rooms and equipment. So take a look at a short demo. Type in an administration account to sign up via ACS. So in the background, it checks if the user has the administration right for the portal. So I zoom it a little bit so that you can see it. And now you can create, especially for schools, create teachers. So if I join this portal. So I type in Edward's name, maybe. And I select the subject she teach, mathematics and Spain. So I can type in a password or leave it empty to create something else to generate it automatically. So now I have in the background, in the setup of the portal, I can decide how to generate email addresses, the prefix of the email address, since I can set up, take forename and last name, take the three letters of the surname and the last name. So we do this here. So I click on generate email, and the portal checks immediately if this alias is available. So if it, I can now create it or select another subdomain that are available on this domain. So I created all what you see is this is based on real time. We have no caching in the background. So now the user is created, and this is also joined in the groups mathematics and Spanish. So Edward has now access, if the user is created, on the SharePoint to the subsites mathematics and Spain. And so let us look at the SharePoint for a quick moment. Microsoft Online. Go to the websites. So it's also possible to set up the team templates that are created, that I use it by creating the subsites. So if I have here mathematics, I go to this page and go to the security settings. Website users. I see here's a special group teachers, and I see here's a group that contains mathematics. And if I click on mathematics, here you see nothing because the SharePoint uses only the identity reference link. So if you are in the portal of Microsoft Office, you can see the memberships, but not on the SharePoint. You can only see the groups, not the members of a group. So also you can do everything else of the US. You can import CSV lists. We have also an import tool creating that clean ups the letters and the words. You know, in the German, we have some special letters that are not available in the yet in the email addresses format, so it's not allowed to use these letters. Also, we have a password generator that creates passwords that are compatible with the tenant password policy. And we can modify users, set new passwords with a password manager. We have a group manager where I can select groups and join other users to groups. All is based on a Griff API. So if I decide to join Edward to the class 8A, I can modify the class here during the UI. So I now see these two folks are in there right now, and now I join Edward to this class 2 and click on save, and then he is added to this group. So another part of our portal is to create closed campus. So I have a special group where I join users that I cannot send emails outside and inside the domain. So I can configure who is allowed to accept inbound exception and outbound exception. I can set rights who can send as someone else or can send on behalf of someone else. And we can create rooms and mailboxes. So that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Sebastian. Okay. Great. Thank you very much. That's your contact info right there. Yeah? Okay. All right. So, hopefully you just saw some very quick introduction to this Graph API, and I showed you a little bit more some of the concepts. So I really encourage, if you are building an application, then please tell me about it if you're willing to share some information with me. More importantly, how can I help you? Are you stuck? Can I unblock you? Are you missing some API method that we should be building? Just tell me as much as possible. Also, would you like to be an early adopter? So there are some things that we're going to add that are unique, and we're designing those capabilities, and we'd like some feedback. You notice I showed you a differential query. This is a pull-based. In other words, your application has to call to get the changes. We also think about notifications. So that means your application can subscribe and then always get notified when there's changes in the directory. So we're designing that. So if you have interest in being try that out, then we will have something by the end of the summertime for you to actually have some preview experience with that. I told you I would share my information. There's my email address. I also have my business card here, so please come and talk to me. If you don't want to share necessarily what your project is because it's for business reasons, that's fine too. I have a survey. You can just fill out some information. You can remain anonymous. You don't have to tell me who you are or what company you're with. Just tell me what your requirements are. You can also give me that information there. So you have two choices. So this is references. You can look on the slides to get these. These are links to different resources, sample applications, how to get your Azure AD tenant and the trial Azure account. Also, we have a walkthrough that shows you the step-by-step. You do first single sign-on, then you do the Graph API, then you take the solution and make it a multi-tenant application. So it's a three-part series that we developed. And also, on our team blog is where we publish some of the new information about new versions coming up. And then I mentioned the preview of the OAuth authorization. So thank you very much. Please fill out the survey. And I'll be here for a few minutes with both Martina and Sebastian if you have any questions. Thank you very much.